Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you. Good morning, good morning. This is your own Sister C here at the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby. My treat for you today is a research report by two wonderful researchers, Dr. Charlotte Waddell and Dr. Jennifer Charlesworth. And you'll be hearing a little bit more about them in just a moment. This information is something that is very digestible, very pertinent. So I hope as you listen along today, you will see one or two things that you could do to help with this increase, this escalation in the number of children and youth that are experiencing depression, anxiety, frustration, and other mental health challenges as we go through all the changes associated with COVID-19. And now I'll take you over into the interview. Good morning. I would like to invite you to our Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon show and ask you if you will each just tell our listeners a little bit more about yourselves. We'll start with Dr. Charlotte.
Hello. Thank you, Charlotte. I am a professor in the Faculty of Health Sciences at Simon Fraser University, and I also run the Children's Health Policy Center, where we are very, very committed to seeing research really put into action to benefit kids. So we were delighted when the opportunity came along to work with Jennifer.
Okay, and Dr. Jennifer.
Hello. I am Jennifer Charlesworth. I'm the representative for Children and Youth of British Columbia, and that's an independent officer responsible to the Legislative Assembly. And my role is to advocate for children, youth, and young adults in the province.
Okay. And our show is Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon. So we'll be learning from you today some things that we can take action with, the support that you're doing. First of all, the research study that you have just released and are talking about, what are some of the key things that people need to know about this report?
Why don't you go ahead, Charlotte?
Okay, I'll start out and then hand it over to you, Jennifer. In doing this report, which was commissioned by Jennifer's office, we wanted to take a look at what BC could expect will be mental health challenges due to COVID for children. And there are not yet good quality studies on the actual current pandemic for kids, what's happening for kids, although we're getting lots and lots of reports. So we took a look at evidence from past pandemics and also from other kinds of natural disasters, things like hurricanes, earthquakes, wildfires, to see what happened to kids when they were exposed to those extreme adversities. And what all the studies that we identified, they all show that certain mental health problems really significantly increased, in particular, anxiety, post-traumatic stress, depression, and also behavior problems, especially for younger kids. And these are all things that we do see when children are exposed to very serious adversities, but the levels, things went up in some cases fivefold. Mm. So very, very high increases. But I guess I would say, Charlotte, that the biggest worry that we have is pre-COVID, the needs were already very, very high. And so pre-COVID, we estimate that approximately 95,000 children, and by children, I mean those 18 years and younger, so younger kids and also teenagers, 95,000 at any given time are likely experiencing mental health problems that are causing really serious distress, symptoms, and even impaired functioning. But what we also knew pre-COVID is that fewer than half of those kids were getting any mental health help. So we headed into this pandemic, you know, early last year with very high levels of unmet need. And now we anticipate those needs are going to really rise and likely already have risen quite dramatically.
Yeah, I think that's among the questions some of the teachers' unions were raising, that they were rushing to get kids back into school, but not really looking into the mental health needs and planning that as part of whatever supports are there. How, I think you've identified that there's some health disparities among different groups of children.
Maybe I'll jump in there too. And just to set a bit of context, our office receives calls from young people or for them adults who love those young people to get some help in accessing services, or if they feel like their voices aren't being heard in the services that they need. And we also review all of the critical injuries and deaths of children who are receiving services. So we receive thousands and thousands of those calls and reports every year. And so you can appreciate with that amount of data, obviously it's a narrower population than the hundreds of thousands of children in the province, but it gives us some insight as to those young people that are at greater disadvantage, facing greater adversities, either because of what's happened to them previously in their lives or what they're experiencing, or a combination of what they're experiencing right now. And what we were starting to see in the early months of COVID was that there were a number of young people who were already experiencing mental health challenges before COVID, who was a result of that isolation, separation from peers, separation from family members, separation from the kinds of activities that fostered their resilience and their well-being. And we started to see more and more mental health concerns and kids experiencing exactly what Dr. Waddell has found out, higher rates of depression, higher rates of anxiety, post-traumatic stress, and significantly in the population we see behavioral challenges. So our population typically does face more adversities. They're often dealing with poverty. They're dealing with family violence, substance use within their family, mental health challenges and whatnot. And those young people have been particularly impacted. And within that, I would say both racialized children, especially because of the anti-Asian racism that we saw early on and that persists, and then the racism that Indigenous young people and families face all the time, is also exacerbated those adversities and contributed to the mental health challenges. So inequities, social, economic, and attitudinal all contribute to the risks that our young people are facing right now.
So who are you sharing this report with?
Well, we're fortunate to be able to do this beautiful collaboration with SFU. So my office has the opportunity to share any of our reports or any of the reports that we've done in collaboration with others through the Legislative Assembly and through the Select Standing Committee on Children and Youth. So as soon as we have a new committee appointed by the new government, then this report will invite Charlotte to present the report to the Legislative Assembly, which is critically important. We share that with the decision makers in government. It's already been shared with deputy ministers and ministries in health, mental health, education, and children and families. And then through our networks, we're able to share it out publicly. And then Simon Fraser has been a joy to work with because of your network, Charlotte, and the people that... In fact, I got a call from Alberta today saying, wow, could you please share more about this report? Because we need to pay attention to it as well. You got a friend in me. Yeah, you got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from a nice warm bed, you just remember what you owe.
Now, was saying it reminds me of a song of us, you know, the more we get together, the happier we'll be. But that, you know, there is one Canada and that people do need to work together across the different sectors, the educational, the social, et cetera. I'm sorry, I cut you off, Dr. Charlotte.
That's quite all right. The only other thing I was going to add, I'm teaching this fall on Zoom, like so many of us, and I have a wonderful group of graduate students, and I just want to give them a shout out because we discuss COVID, and it's a class on children's health policy. So we've talked a lot about COVID, but we shared the report there too.
So to what extent are you sharing or getting involvement with teachers' unions or other groups that have been calling out for mental health support for children and youth?
I'm smiling because immediately following this, I'm meeting with the BC Teachers Federation, who reached out to talk about what they're seeing for the children in their care in schools. So it'll be we'll have a far-reaching conversation, no doubt, but the mental health is one that both Charlotte and I have been speaking about. And schools are such a vital hub for mental health and well-being as well.
Yes.
And one of the things that we've been talking about is that as we move through this and for the years to follow, and Charlotte will have more to add because she's got so much knowledge in this area, is we have to think of schools as the hubs or the places in which we can locate mental health and well-being services and supports, because it's an environment in which children already have existing relationships. It's a place where the vast majority of our children go and can be seen. So I think that schools are such a vital place for mental health and well-being supports, but teachers can't do it alone. And as Charlotte said, and my office has said for years, the mental health services system in British Columbia is woefully inadequate. So some insignificant investments need to be made.
So in understanding how do things move into public policies? What are some things that people could advocate for in terms of public policies that would get at reducing this disparity?
I'll jump in, and then you will too, Jennifer. One of the things that's frustrated me for a long time, both in my research and teaching work at SFU, but also in my work as a child and adolescent psychiatrist, also caring for actually street-involved youth, and it puzzles me, and I think this is an opportunity to really do something quite a bit more helpful for kids. It puzzles me that children's mental health remains quite invisible. We still have the majority of people unaware of what you just outlined, Jennifer, that children's mental health services, both prevention services, early intervention and treatment for kids with disorders, those have been chronically, systemically underfunded, just good, hardworking people, but not enough of them, whether it's in the schools or also many things that we can do in the community, even with quite young children. That's one of the things, you know, I would say COVID gives us a marvelous opportunity to really have people come together and say, this is not good enough. People, you talked about speaking out, Charlotte, I couldn't agree more. If people think this is important, and I feel they should, Jennifer, I know you share that feeling, speak out, talk to whoever your MLA is, talk to the media, reach out and say, this is incredibly important. And I would say we have an opportunity, but with COVID, we already know there are also many competing demands on the public dollars, how to help people out who've lost their jobs, how to address housing and food insecurity issues. So my main plea in the middle of all this is don't lose sight of the kids. That is our next generation. I know that's almost a cliche to say that, but it's if we let these kids slip through the cracks with worsening problems during COVID, you know, what happens to the next generation of teachers and nurses and radio reporters? This is just critical. Don't forget the kids.
Now, as you mentioned, MLA, very interesting thing I found around election time. I went to interview some students around what did they see as issues. And so many said, oh, that's politics. And I don't get involved in politics. So as you are teaching people, how do you get them to understand that if you're in a university and somebody governs you, you're involved in politics? But what is the role? Some people don't know what is the MLA. Can you explain a little bit about MLA system and how people would connect?
Well, maybe I'll jump in on that one. So MLA, member of the Legislative Assembly. So throughout the province, we've got all sorts of districts that are able to elect a member that will represent that geographic area in the Legislative Assembly and the Provincial Assembly. And as we've just gone through an election recently, the New Democrats are been invited to form government. So they will appoint a cabinet, they will appoint committee members, they'll appoint a parliamentary secretaries and allocate a number of responsibilities. But even regardless, that kind of gives the structure to government, so ministers and whatnot. But regardless, every person in the province has access to their own member of the Legislative Assembly who is responsible to bring forward the constituent interests to the broader whole of government. Yeah, so people can look it up on their local Legislative Assembly member, and there'll always be a constituency office that people can reach out to by phone, by email, by text, by chat, and let your voices be heard. And it is that elected member's responsibility to represent the interests of their constituents in the discussions that happen at the provincial level.
Now, sometimes people make mention of a person having a portfolio. Whose lap or whose portfolio does child and youth mental health services fall in?
Such a good question, because nominally it falls into the portfolio of the Ministry of Children and Family Development. They have the child and youth mental health portfolio. However, this is one of those classic, you know, you need to get everybody involved, because of course there's acute care. And so the Ministry of Health and the health authorities are important and responsible as well. And then there's also a ministry, and we'll see if it continues on when they announce their new cabinet on Thursday, but the Ministry of Mental Health and Addictions. And that's responsible for the public policy with respect to mental health. So those are the three bodies that have direct responsibility. And I would argue that the Ministry of Education, too, in their policies is also really important. So those four bodies are all share in some responsibility for mental health for children, even though it's kind of more the responsibility of one over another. Does that make sense, Charlotte?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Now, part of my audience, you know, of course, are college students, but also I host a podcast of seniors. And sometimes our senior podcast a couple of times a month is aired through the show. But I taught for 20 years in the health and nutrition area. But no matter what I taught, I would always say this is a participatory democracy. And if you don't participate in it, democracy goes to hell in a handbasket. So I think yes, that the more that as you are teaching students, and now that people, they have more time on hand, you know, it's a good time for them to be able to see how they could support pieces of legislation or how they could support things that are going into the laps of these new people that will be on cabinets and so forth that are getting formed.
Yes. You know, and the other thing that I just find so amazing is that one of the joys of my job is to meet with young people, young adults and youth. And so often young people will say, you know, it might not change for me, but for the kids coming up or my siblings or my relatives and whatnot that are younger, I hope things will change. And it just, sometimes it breaks my heart because these young people have experienced such tremendous harm and adversity, and yet they have a view of it could be better.
Yes.
So I think it's just so important to lift those voices up and to make sure that they are heard in our participatory democracy.
Yeah, I think it's so hopeful that the number of young people around the world that have gotten involved in the climate issue, climate change, organizing demonstrations on the fly, you know, getting even days of school closed so that a demonstration or protest could go forward to show how deeply people feel about the issue of climate. Do you have students now that are taking these, I know you mentioned that you have some students that you are working with. Are any of them taking this report as a project to in their field work?
The students right now that I'm working with, they're in the health sciences and they're all students of public health. And so I can't think of one of them that is not really addressing ideas to do with COVID, the harms and how we might prevent those harms or reduce those harms. So I would say it's woven into everything everybody's talking about. They're partway through their master's programs, all of them. And I can't wait to see what they, you know, what they do when they graduate. Many of them are graduating next spring, for example. These will be our next round of public health leaders. They will go out into, you know, the health authorities, the health ministry, the children's ministry. They're going to be leaders that are very well schooled in, you know, what's happened as a result of this and what do we need to do to better prepare for next time and also to just recover and get through this.
Yes, this recovery and healing is very important. You also mentioned, you know, some of the things that have been undetected, that there's been this large increase. And while we're waiting maybe for government people to do something, what are some things that people might observe around kids within their home or neighborhood or programs that are indications of post-traumatic, you know, stress disorder or depression?
You know, I would just comment, Charlotte, we found that those anxiety, post-traumatic stress, depression, and behavior challenges, those all are much worse when kids have experienced extra adversities, if you will. So kids have had, for example, if a child has had somebody become ill or perhaps even die, if a child has witnessed really difficult events, those are tougher experiences. And so one thing is just to be aware of what's going on in that child's life. Have they lost someone? Are they living with a parent who's, or family members who are highly stressed, maybe really struggling to make ends meet, having to move, struggling with food insecurity, struggling with the racism that you mentioned, Jennifer. So that's one issue, just to be aware of what that child's life is actually like. And then just to have an open lines of conversation to talk with kids. As you said, Jennifer, and I find it's true of teenagers, and I find it's true of even very young children. They can say a lot. They know a lot about how they're feeling, what they need, what would help them. And so just asking them how they're doing, what would help them out. But the kinds of things, if a child is getting very, very anxious, you're going to see them start to maybe be very withdrawn, have difficulty engaging in the things that they used to like to do, maybe get over-focused on something like, say, the hand-washing that we're all doing, over-focused on worry about this very serious illness. Depression in kids looks somewhat similar to how it looks in older people. Somebody who's just very sad and not able to participate, doesn't get enjoyment from the things that they were good at or used to really get enjoyment from. And behavior challenges tend to be fairly easy for adults to identify because you know right away when a child is acting out. But that can be an expression. Sometimes it can be an expression of anxiety and depression as well, where just, especially with younger kids, that can be the way that they express it first. And so equally important there too, to know what's going on in that child's life and ask them, talk with them about it.
You know, a lot of the places where people had interactions with children, like their church, different people who might notice something that was about a coach, the church, someone in a singing class, all of those things have been disrupted. What are some other places or ways that people might come in contact with a child or have an opportunity to be open to or express just encouragement?
I think you've hit on something that's just so vitally important, and for adults to understand the impact for children of losing all of those threads of connection in their lives. And we're all feeling the impact of COVID, and we've all experienced some losses. So it's important for us to remember that for a child, the loss of those connections can feel outsized because they don't know when this is going to end and they have a different orientation towards time. So I think you've hit on something really important. I think that's also one of the reasons I think schools are so vitally important and the continuity of education and those relationships that get fostered there. So I think offering connections, recognizing that it's not the best alternative to face-to-face, but being able to have activities over Zoom or through technology, having some ways in which people can reach out to one another, even through text or chats or delightful little emojis, just I'm thinking of you, those little things, any kind of thing that we can do that will remind young people that we're thinking of them or that we're wishing them well or that we want the best for them or sending them a book or reading to them over the phone. That was one of the beautiful things that was happening for many children that were in care and separated from their parents. They were living with foster care. And there was all sorts of opportunities that were created where the parents, even though they couldn't visit in person, would read them their bedtime stories or would greet them in the morning. So whatever ways we can create through the technology, which is the best we've got right now, to ensure that young people know that they are being seen or remembered and they're being held in our hearts is really important. And then from a social point of view, recognizing that as coaches or as teachers or as it music band leaders and whatnot, that those kids that we've had relationships with are struggling. So again, it's asking a lot of adults, but I know that they care deeply about the well-being of the children. So looking to them and saying, you know, is there anything you can do to, again, let kids know that, you know, you've got them in their mind, in your mind. So those social little bits, any little bit that we can do to make sure kids know that they aren't alone is really important. Charlotte may have other ideas too.
No, I totally agree, Jennifer. And it is more work for adults, but that reaching out and that, you know, conveying, even if things are really tough, to still convey a message of hopefulness where at all possible, to let kids know that we will get through this. It's much like you mentioned, Charlotte, the youth, tremendous outpouring of activism regarding climate change. But many of those youth have said, adults, you need to get your act together. And so as adults during COVID, we need to convey, we're not through this yet, but we will get through this. And to convey to kids that there's a sense of people working very, very hard across our society to really take care of everybody and get through this as quickly as we can. So I think that's important too, to give kids a sense of the adults are in charge, the adults, we got this.
Mm-hmm. I think when we've talked about the budget, what places are, who are the people that are able to give reports and have influence on the budget or talk to the people that will be developing the budget when, you know, this new government gets going?
Mm-hmm. Well, the new government, as Charlotte has already said, is going to have, Dr. Charlotte is going to have many different things, many different groups, many different interests are going to be saying, you know, we're a priority. We have to, as part of the pandemic recovery, we need to be seen within this budget. Although I'm not taking away from the validity of any of that. Having said that, I think it's really important that the decision makers understand what's at stake if we don't address the unique and current needs of the young people. So I think it's important, again, participatory democracy, letting the decision makers, the members of the Legislative Assembly, the members, there's a select standing committee on finance and government. They make recommendations to government around budgets. And then individual ministers as well will be going to Treasury Board to try and make a case. So it's very helpful if they have a sense of what is a priority for the public as well, because fundamentally, they are accountable to the public. The other thing I'd like to say is I think what's so important is understanding that it's not just about we're going to put money into a program here or we're going to invest in a service line here, because children's mental health, and the reason that we focus so much on that is that it's so pervasive. If a child's mental health is really struggling, then they may turn to substances to numb the emotional pain. That's what we've learned from young people in one of the reports we issued, that they use substances to numb their emotional pain. So we have to think about mental health is actually important if we want to address the other public health emergency, which is around problematic substance use. So if we're thinking about, you know, housing insecurity or food insecurity or economic security, then those public policy decisions are also important to think that if a child is feeling chaos in their lives because they're not able to, you know, they're not in a safe housing or they don't have food, then that affects their mental health and well-being too. So really inviting the decision makers to recognize if we put child and youth well-being at the center, because those are our most vulnerable citizens, then we have to wrap around to make sure that the public health policies and the public policies and the decisions we make are lifting our kids up. So definitely access to services and supports, but also recognizing that if a family is feeling supported, they're better able to support their children as well. So making sure that we think about family-centered policies.
Yeah, I think there's two linkages that it helps with you bringing them together, because we were talking about reducing teen suicide and this connection yes. between teen suicide and Vancouver having an epidemic of deaths from overdoses of people using alone, apart, separate from anyone, and the closure of some of these centers. So I think the linkages between those can help people to see, oh, it's just this month is teen suicide prevention month, and this month is the month that we talk about youth being separated from the foster care system, but how that whole circle of things work together to be a risk and not be the society and kind of a world that people in Vancouver and Canada imagine or envision themselves as having.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. Everything is so interconnected, and mental health is actually both a symptom and a cause, I think, mm-hmm. of some of the challenges that we face.
You know, I think of postcards and things that people can see. We see so many times a day to wash your hands. But I've been saying, you know, when you wash your hands, you're usually in front of a mirror. So smile at yourself. The beauty of a smile, but these little things that people can see, many seniors, if a person's isolated in their home, but at there's some point, there was a story about a group of seniors who knit, and they've knitted. Took on the project of knitting baby booties, blankets, caps, and even sweaters for people who are without, people who are homeless or people who just are having a hard time. So I think whatever it is that a person likes, that maybe that might be a possible way of being inspired by the data that's in your report, you know, to find some way that they could reach out more to children and youth or to families, you know, because some families, the stress of having to be at home working and have, as one lady said, I'm trying to teach kindergarten and trying to get this report in for my company. If there are ways that people can see that they could let somebody know that they might be available, you know, if you can't babysit a child, but maybe they can do something that would be helpful to families that are struggling with, you know, the double stress of being laid off work or having to work at home and also having to do some of the daily education for a child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And workplaces can be a powerful source of support as well. Like we support our colleagues. Half of my staff have school-aged children, for example. So really acknowledging and recognizing that as an employer, we have to be flexible and innovative and supportive and really acknowledge the kinds of challenges that those families are facing. But I've also heard delightful things where employers will send a little package of goodies to the family home with the things for the children to do, like, you know, games or coloring or whatnot. And then they'll have somebody who will host a Zoom gathering for the children on behalf of the employer, you know, so that the kids are all there connecting with other kids. So it's a time for us to be innovative and creative for sure. And to recognize that families are in many different places in terms of their access to technology, their access to the services and support. So, you know, remembering the diversity of people that we need to reach out to and getting creative. I think I interrupted you, Charlotte.
Nope, not at all. I was just wanting to say, Charlotte, thinking of your comment that you run a podcast for elders, for seniors, and you've been asking and making comments about how do we influence change constructively. One thing that would just be fantastic would be if elders, seniors, were to jump in and raise the voices for children's mental health. I guess I'm saying that from a perspective, and Jennifer, I know that you share this, and Charlotte, you may share it too. all children are a collective responsibility that we all share. It's not just about one's own grandchildren or one's own children, so to speak. But seniors, elders, have a really, I think, a very powerful set of voices in our democracy. And if they were to speak out on behalf of children's mental health, and if they were to say, well, we can't, you know, we have to put the kids first, even amid everything else going on, I think that could be really powerful.
Yes, one of our podcasts was around advocacy. People wanted to know those same things. What are the steps? There's some people who in the group who were union stewards or were involved in groups like Costco, and then others that didn't have that. So wanting to know, what can I do? Is a letter that I send to somebody? Do I call up my MP or my MLA? So what are, like, I have the summary of your findings, but I think it might be helpful if there were some key points that people could have that would arm them with the facts, and then maybe have a couple of those points, like the, how do people get in touch with your organization? How do they get in touch with you if they wanted to be supportive?
So mine is simple. Our website is the best way to get in touch, and it's just childhealthpolicy.ca, and it's on the SFU system. So that's okay. The best possible way to reach myself and the people that I work with.
So it's childhealthpolicy.ca. And since people can't come to the campus, then if they get in touch with you, you could tell them if there's a Zoom podcast or when there are things that they could, ways that they could learn more about the report and action steps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the report is on our website, and they can see a lot of other materials as well about children's mental health.
And similar for us, a couple of ways. One is our website is rcybc.ca. Go on the website. There's the contact information for emails. We get to email inquiries. There's also our toll-free number. So that's 1-800-476-3933. And people can reach us there if they've got perspective that they want to share, but most significantly, if they are concerned about the well-being of a child or feel that they're not getting the services and supports that they are entitled to or should be receiving, and they want to have some advocacy support or to let us know something that they think is a pattern that requires us to pay attention as an advocacy body, they can certainly call that number and speak to one of our intake coordinators. And if it's something that we think our advocates can assist the young person, then that will get referred on. Or we try really hard to help people figure out, well, where do you go with, you know, if you've got a concern or you've got an issue. So that's something to bear in mind. Of course, the other thing I do want to say that is that if anybody ever feels that a child is in danger and requires some care and protection, there is the children's helpline. You can call from anywhere in BC and you get a help immediately. And that number, there's no area code. It's 310-1234. So that would be if anybody feels that a child is, because of the circumstances, what's happening to them, somebody feels that that child is in danger and in need of protection, then that's the number to call. Or you can call us if there's something around, you know, should this child should be getting some help and how come they're not getting help and that kind of thing for an advocacy role. But really important in these times, because we don't have the eyes on children in the same way we did, because they're not on the soccer field or in the playground or having play dates or going to birthday parties or in school and whatnot, it's really important that we keep our eyes open to children who might be struggling more and see if we can help them or their families. It's a very difficult time for many, many families, and some definitely more so than others because of the challenges and the adversities they face. So it's up to us to kind of look out for one another.
This song by Drizzy Mentors is Shake a Hand, Make a Friend, a little different from the Touch a Hand, Make a Friend by the Staple Singers. But as you know, CJSF is known for playing lesser known, less familiar artists. Here we go.
Friend, 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 friend sensational when you hit the flow. Make sure you know to be neighborly. Showing love gonna change the world and help some people, society who think they gotta be antisocial. People done gone plumb loco. Shaking a hand, making a friend, gonna help them release that chokehold. Ain't no need to have your heart so cold when folks can't even penetrate. We all created in the image of I am, so that means I can relate to situations you dealing with. You feel with anxiety. I'm shaking your hand to let you know I care about your sobriety. It's a variety of people that go through life seeking affirmation. Just a little acknowledgement will help them release their frustration. Look at the picture that God is painting, creating relationship with different nations. You could be shaking a hand with a person that helped you be the next Bill Gates. And all you need is an open mind and a little bit of opportunity. He places us strategically in different types of community. I need you, you need me, we all need God, obviously. Shake a hand, make a friend, and create some unity.
Shake a hand, 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 make a friend, friend, friend. Shake a hand, 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 make a friend, friend, friend. Hand, 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 friend, friend, friend. Hand, 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 friend, friend, friend. Shake a hand, 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 make a friend, friend, friend. Shake a hand, 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 make a friend, friend, friend. Hand, 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 friend, friend, friend. Hand, 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 friend, friend, friend.
You have not, 'cause you ask not. How you gonna get that promotional spot? By having a conversation with the boss that gave you that job. I feel like I've been robbed if I go through life day to day without meeting somebody new where I can share a little faith. Come outside your comfort zone. You ain't got no time to waste. By reaching out and showing love, you can put a smile on somebody's face. It don't matter what state you in. Make an effort, shake a hand. By the end of the week, watch how many people that became your friend. This ain't just no passing phase. Corporate America do this every day. This is how they make billions. You can say they found a way to relate to their environment, adapt to their surroundings. Obama shook a billion hands before his presidential housing. Now that's kinda astounding. So this is what I figure. You could be a taker or so sees as a giver. But I need you, you need me, we all need God, obviously. Shake a hand, make a friend, and create some unity.
Shake a hand, 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 make a friend, friend, friend. Shake a hand, 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 make a friend, friend, friend.
Your friends go hand in hand. Solo, if that's how you wanna stand. United we blessed, divided we stressed. You need to figure out a plan. Don't get mad at the messenger. This revelation's for all men. Kinda come together and shake a hand, make a friend. This is how we all begin to enter in a new season. God created humanity to work together like we in Eden. Feeding the homeless coming out to meet the needs of an open mouth. Somebody asks you for some change, shake their hand and say no doubt. This is what it's all about. Taking care of the least of these. Then you start to have ears to hear and eyes to see. Excuse me, my apologies. If you start to get offended here, let me shake your hand. I love you, that's why I'm convicted. It's not a song to bash the world. It's not a song to glorify Christians. This is meant for you to be relational with the life you was given. 'Cause I need you, you need me, we all need God, obviously. Shake a hand, make a friend, and create some unity.
Shake a hand, 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 make a friend, friend, friend. Shake a hand, 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 make a friend, friend, friend.
Now that song really relates to people of every age having an opportunity to make things better by reaching out, making a friend. We may not be able to touch hands, but you can do things that touch people's hearts, as expressed in this song by Drizzy Mentors. Now, I'm Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, back here in the place today, and we continue with a very important interview discussion around the increase in mental health, emotional health, disruptions, statuses caused by all of the things involved in COVID-19, being not being able to be with friends at school, missing games, not being able to meet people at Sunday school, at parties, family dinners, etc. So as our doctors have pointed out, it's very important for people to reach out and to find ways that they can offer support, give a smile, give a kind word, help someone with homework, help a parent who might be having a difficult time. It makes me think of a song, Shake a Hand, Shake a Hand. And here at this time, you know, we're being discouraged from shaking hands. But these numbers that you just gave are ways that people can shake hands with solutions. So again, this is CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, or cjsf.ca anywhere online. And I'm Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here in That Place to Be. And you were just hearing from Dr. Jennifer Charlesworth about two places that you can contact. And I want you to, again, say what RCYBC is. And that
Okay, RCYBC, so that is the Representative for Children and Youth of BC, and we're an independent officer of the Legislative Assembly providing oversight for the well-being of children and youth in this province.
Okay, and again, this is again with helping people understand how government works. These independent officers, what powers do you have? Or what? Tell us a little bit more about this independent, because they're independent officers also for seniors. So what is the function of that role?
Yeah, so independent legislative officers, there are seven of us. So the ones that might be most familiar is the Office of the Ombudsperson, the Auditor General, Conflict of Interest, the Elections Commissioner, who's been in the news a tremendous amount. So there are a number of us that report directly to the Legislative Assembly. So we are not appointed by any particular party. In fact, all of us are appointed by unanimous consent across all three parties that are involved in the selection of any of the independent officers. So our powers are in a legislation. I have what's called the Representative for Children and Youth Act. And so I have powers to provide individual and systemic advocacy, undertake reviews and investigations, and do special research reports. All of those reports get tabled within the Legislative Assembly. I'm required to do that. Now, I can't tell the government that I don't have authority to tell the government what they must do, but I try and use influence to say these are the things that you should do based on what we have heard from children and from those impacted. So with our recommendations, we monitor those and then we report out publicly as to how the government is doing. And thus far, in my 2 years of this five-year appointment, government has accepted all of our recommendations, is taking action on all of them. So, you know, they appreciate, I think, the intention that we have in coming forward, including with a report like this. It's a little different report because it was done by Charlotte and her team. We commissioned it because we felt that the expertise lay in the Children's Health Policy Center. But nonetheless, we bring these forward and advocate for government to respond to the suggestions, the policy direction that's outlined in this report.
And Dr. Charlotte Waddell, you were bringing forth something that's one of the important functions of a university, to do studies that's not just abstract, but something that's definitely related to an issue within our world. How within the university, are there other ways that other departments are sharing in or made aware of your report?
We're going to make it available through our website and also for example, I will, and I have already done so, directly email people. But we have things that happen that get a life of their own, which is quite wonderful. For example, the Dean of the Health Sciences, Tanya Bubala, she tweets out these things to the whole world. So we have lots of different ways of getting the message out.
Well, that's great, because with the social media, people having to use social media to get anything done, it puts you on that platform so that people, you know, that kind of intersection between mean tweets and positive, productive tweets. So I'm happy to share that number again. So will you again, you know, say your number or website and how people could get in touch with you?
Yes, it's in the Faculty of Health Sciences at SFU, and our website is just all one word, childhealthpolicy.ca. And that will take you on to basically, there'll be a, like you have, Jennifer, a listing of my email and other people's emails. But there's also a lot of other resources on our website. So just something maybe some of your listeners might be interested in, Charlotte. For example, we 4 times a year, we produce a short report called the Children's Mental Health Research Quarterly. And we try to really feature new studies, new findings, but put in ways that practitioners, families, policymakers can read it quite easily, read it fairly quickly, and just with tips and pointers and things really aimed at policymakers in addition to, you know, family members and practitioners and young people themselves. So there are a lot of resources. Anyone that's wanting a bit more depth on any of the children's mental health topics, go to our website.
Oh, thank you. I think what you both have shared, you've given something that people could listen up to and then that they could take action. So it doesn't matter whether you have children or not, you can be an advocate for children. You can be an advocate for change or someone who helps just share the information that gets somebody else excited about calling somebody up, sending a support letter to RCYBC and letting them know that you're out there. Because sometimes people say nobody's responding. So just a letter. I had one senior that got really excited about something with education. And right there that day, she wrote a letter to say, I believe this is important. So I think that just knowing that, you know, those things count and it can be a good relief of one's own mental health to know that you're contributing something in some way to help resolve one of the problems, especially this big problem of an increased number and increased potential for many children and youth to be mentally affected by the restrictions and changes associated with COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. And just one thing before we close, I wanted to note that Charlotte and her team did another report that we released on our respective websites in June, and that was Effective Approaches for Reducing Childhood Anxiety, mm-hmm. with a focus on the kinds of interventions that were practical and effective to help young people with anxiety during the COVID pandemic and beyond with online options as well. And I think that's really important because sometimes we just think, oh, this feels so large and we only have in mind sort of going to see a counselor or getting help at the school from the school counselor. But there are a number of things and the efficacy of those approaches were encapsulated into that report as well. So on both of our websites, people will be able to find that. I think it's really important that we know that there are good interventions out there and children can, you know, children are inherently resilient. So it's up to us to figure out how to help and foster and nurture that resilience and that well-being.
And one thing that way people can respond, I know when I was taking the bus up to the mountain with students, their fingers were flying. So you could hit save and hit like and hit share when you read these reports that are on the websites that you've heard about. And just in doing that, not only will you feel that you're making a contribution, but that person you share it to might be just another person that has a bit of the solution. And I think for, as you mentioned, one place that people do sometimes come in interaction is in stores. And so the people in stores, instead of frowning at kids, you know, smile and do something that just gives that kind of encouragement to a parent that might be, you know, dealing with a crying or whining child to, you know, to be of assistance in the way of giving a smile and saying, may I help? Or is there something that I could do? Because it is a double solution. A parent that's dealing with a child that's stressed out or depressed also is likely to feel stressed out or depressed. So you can make a difference with a smile and just not going beyond hearing these facts to seeing what's your role in being a part of the solution.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
So thank you and enjoy your next Zoom.
Thank you so much.
You all have lots of energy and thank you for all of the information. And I will also continue to share information about this important report.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Charlotte.
Okay, you're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, thank you again for joining us this morning. This has been Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here at the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby. I'll see you again next week at 10. And what I always say when people ask me what time it is love time, poem time.
Love time, poem time. Love time, poem time. Love time, poem time. Time for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time. Time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time. Time for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time. Time for poems, poets and singers. Time to untie all life's ringers. Poem time, love time. Time for you to reveal to me. Unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace. Rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words. Place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time. Poem time, love time. Love time, poem time. Times for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time. Time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time. Times for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time. Poem time, love time. Time for poems, poets, singers. Time to untie all life's ringers. Time for you to reveal to me, unravel all your mystery. Time for joy and utter grace, rest from toiling in this place. Place of poems, place of words, place for love instead of swords. Love time, poem time, poem time, love time. Love time, poem time, poem time, love time. Love time, poem time, poem time, love time, love time.